all those coming into the meeting, we've went ahead and send out attendance links to your emails. Just please make sure you're logged into your email account to register your attendance for today's meeting. We'll still have a few more interns. We'll give a couple more minutes. You got some cookies on your way. Stops a few more coming into the room. And again, if you're just joining us, we'll go ahead. We've sent out the attendance link. Please make sure you check your email for that link and then log in your account. All right. One last time, just make sure you check your email to register your attendance. On that note, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes from February 9th Faculty Senate meeting?
Cool.
Moved by Senator Satimi, seconded by Senator Day. Any discussion? All in favor, thumbs up or yay? Sorry, that was my fault. Thumbs up everywhere. This was the most positive screen I've seen all day long. Look at this. I almost want to do this every time now. And a ballot is being sent out.
They got it. They're coming in.
Real time. Thank you so much. Arnicky is fantastic. Your sweater is fantastic. Yes, man.
Yeah. The all is it. All of it goes for.
Yeah. Okay.
And we have more than half. That's it. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Looks like the motion passes. And with that, to be respectful of everybody's time, Mr. President, I gladly turn the meeting space over to you, sir.
Good afternoon. It's good to be with you. A little bit of a dreary day today, but I think springtime is right around the corner. At least that's what the weather prediction says. So it's good to be with you. I did submit a written report. Sorry for that being a little late to touch on a number of different topics in there. But I think I'll reserve my comments almost specifically for financial matters, just for the purpose of this group to keep you kind of up to date on where things are at. Legislative session is just over halfway over. House Bill 500, which is the budget bill, has moved now from the House to the Senate. There were some changes to House Bill 500 as it pertains to state employee health benefits and state subsidies. That was the most substantial change from the original version to the committee substitute that was ultimately passed and then passed off the House floor. Unfortunately, not much, if any, relief for post-secondary education from the initial budget bill. We are, as the bill currently stands, looks like we're slated for about a $7 million budget reduction to our base funding. It comes in a multitude of buckets, but is a total of about $7 million in budgetary impact to the institution. There's still work to be done. The Senate is due to do their work, and then the committee will get together and have a conference committee. We can expect that we more or less know where both chambers stand by the 30th of this month. So there's about 3.5 weeks of work here left to go. I'll just, say it's not where we want to be. It definitely is going to present some budgetary challenges, and unfortunately for us, as we're doing assumptions for next year, we're going to have to make some assumptions of some state support reductions as we do our assumptions for the upcoming year. Been working with Dr. Brent, the chair. We'll be having a faculty lunch and learn after we get back from spring break. We'll have some greater detail on the budgetary impacts, and eager to share that with you once we have a bit more clarity on that work. Please know that the provost, as the senior vice president for academic affairs, will be putting her budget work through the process here over the coming weeks, and you can expect to hear some feedback from deans and chairs concerning the work that we got to do in the days ahead. So appreciate your all's patience as we kind of navigate those externalities. We continue to see strong performance on the things that we can control inside of the institution at this point in time. Happy to have the board approve the audit at the meeting last week. We had a clean bill of health from the audit, and of course this is our SACS review year, so we will be obviously getting that document done a little earlier in the year than what we experienced this year, and eager to get started on next year's audit now that last year's audit is over and wrapped up with. I think I'll stop there, Mr. Chair, and see other lots of touch on a lot of other things. Look at the dates on my submitted report, some engagement activities, some things that are going on, a few legislative updates, but maybe the best thing to do is see if there's any questions from the body.
Absolutely, Mr. President. Thank you again for sending the report. We have that linked in the agenda that was linked, sent out via email earlier for everybody early today, if you want to reference that. With that, I turn the floor over. I see a hand from Senator Lauck.
Hi, Dr. McFadden. Thanks for being here. I just have a comment about the educational session with the Board of Regents. I guess it was last week. I've kind of lost track. But I attended, and Garrett Yoder attended, and I was expecting it to be a public meeting. Obviously, they did not. You didn't meet the threshold of Board of Regents members that required it to be posted as a regular meeting, which apparently was by design because there never was a posting for it. I appreciate not being kicked out, but I'd noticed that the Eastern Progress reporter was kicked out of that. And I think what this goes to is it's the culture of a lack of transparency. All of that information that was shared was excellent. It was just excellent information. I commented to you afterwards that, there would be a whole year's worth of lunch and learns because every one of those topics was just packed with excellent information. So I think it was a missed opportunity to be fully transparent and be open and have open discussions. And my concern really is that the majority of the regents weren't a part of that. So I don't know how they get that information because it was absolutely golden information. It was absolutely excellent. So just again, any opportunity to increase transparency and open this process to all of our processes up as much as possible, I want to encourage that. But again, thanks for not kicking me out.
I know you're welcome. You can expect to see that any future informational sharing times or those types of things will come at the end of an executive committee meeting, which will be a publicly noticed meeting moving forward. So you can kind of be on the lookout for that. May not expect to see the full cadre of staff members, as we do have senior leadership staff meetings where we do have some meetings that are designed for that purpose, but absolutely you can expect to see those educational sessions tagged at the end of executive committee meetings moving forward, if there's topics to be on that list. So appreciate that.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you, Senator Lauck. Anybody else for the president? See no hands from the room. Looking for the Zoom room here. With that, Mr. President, looks like you're off the hook. I thank you for attending as always, and thanks again for the report. If ever we can do anything for you, don't hesitate. Let us know. We'll get to work. On that note, we'll pivot to Provost Ziegler's report.
Thank you, Chair Brent. As always, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you here as well. I also submitted a written report, which I'm not going to read to you, but I do want to focus on the concerns and interests you have regarding the legislative session and what is within your purview as private citizens rather than as EKU employees to do. Obviously, when you choose to advocate for or against a piece of legislation, use only your personal resources, your personal social media account, your personal email, your personal phone, so that no university resources are used in that process. Certainly make it clear that you're acting as a private citizen, especially if you have employment information or something on your social media accounts. We do want to distinguish that from EKU's official positions. Please be civil. This has never happened with an EKU faculty member, but people from other institutions were apparently profane last year, and that became the focus of the legislative intention rather than the substance of the individual's comments. Be succinct, just as you don't want your student papers to go on and on and on. Please show our legislators the same courtesy. It's most effective to reach out to your own representative and identify yourself as a constituent rather than sending a large email or targeting legislators who don't have any electoral accountability to you. Please stay in line with the viewpoint neutrality policy for the university, and it has a very clear section about how you can exercise your rights as private citizens, which of course we definitely want you to do. I'm actually going to turn this over to Vice Chair Howell for a moment because he also has a lot of experience working with legislators and can tell us secrets like what the spam filters catch.
So hello, everyone. So as Provost Ziegler said, once upon a time, my job was to actually read the letters that came into the legislature. I worked in the U.S. Congress in the Office of the Majority Whip. We got a lot of mail. My job was to read it. Among the things that we're looking for when we're reading the material. So first off is that it doesn't take a lot to get legislative interest. I was in a leadership office. 7 letters in a day or 7 phone calls in a day was enough for a phone call to the chief of staff. We had what were called green slips or green sheets. These were just little green pieces of paper that had a bill name at the top. And every time someone called or we read a letter or we were contacted about it, we made a mark for against what it on that bill. And if we had 7 of those, that was an immediate call to the chief of staff. So it does not. And that was a leadership office. So a regular constituent office is probably a lower threshold, does not require a lot of effort to get through to the legislature. That said, was at KPSA, Kentucky Political Science Association, this weekend. The guest speaker or the keynote speaker was Representative Anne Gay Dongworth from Lexington. She said right now phone calls are probably the most effective way to reach the legislature. They're getting so many emails, they can't read them all. In fact, their emails are getting so clogged, they can't find information that they need in them. So in that regard, a phone call is probably better than an email right now. Whatever your form of contact, it needs to be recognizably you who's doing it. Legislative people who read letters, we get really good at recognizing form text. And form letters don't get passed on. Those don't count. The first one does, but after that, they don't count because that's low effort. It's not particularly meaningful feedback from a constituent. A lot of it isn't from constituents, so it gets kind of caught up in that that filter as well. Things that you can't fake. Showing up in person, a phone call. These are things that are taken as meaningful by the staff who answer the phone and who take these questions and will get forwarded along when it hits the threshold. Even an email or a letter that's typed is fine, but if you can like have some way to put your signature on it, that will get more attention because you had to put the time and effort into like getting an electronic signature or putting a signature on the document itself. So those are the kinds of things that we were trained to look for when passing on that information. The final thing is that there is also a very, very fine line when if you want to go up to the legislature, there's a very fine line between what looks like astroturfing to the legislature and what looks like organized activity. So if like you get together with three or four of your friends, all from EKU, and go up to the university and say, "Hey, we're on spring break. We wanted to come talk to our representatives," and you go around as a group of four, that is very powerful because that says to the legislature, "Oh, hey, people at EKU are talking about this and they're coordinating their off time to go." If your entire department shows up during the normal work week, that looks an awful lot like the like EKU is trying to strong arm the legislature, and that is taken much, much more negatively by legislators. And so that's again, that was my training in this area, and I hope that is helpful to you as you are trying to effectively contact the legislature. I would also reinforce what Provost Ziegler said. Concision is good. When I followed lobbyists around the legislature, their lobbying was very frequently two lines. "Hi, I'm so and so. I have a factory in your district. This person with me is your constituent. This bill affects us. We're in favor. We're opposed. Thank you for your time." That was what it was. Provost, I see a question in the chat, and I see Senator Locke has his hand up. Can I just respond to those, or do you want to field them
Absolutely,
first?
go ahead.
All right. So Senator Scaramboni asks, "If only seven people would do it, why don't we have more of a presence and a voice? I know we can't force people to call, but it seems to me that we should already have a number of people doing that. Do we know if we've been doing that?" So it is seven people in a day. So that is the key thing, is it's over time. So seven people over a week is less powerful than seven people in a day. But again, the phone calls have to be perceived as organic. If seven people call and say the exact same thing, that's going to be treated as one phone call, not seven. That's what the person who's answering the phone is listening to. And Senator Locke.
Senator Howell, sometimes I use the drive into campus to make those phone calls. Now, at the federal level, for Congress and Senate, U.S. senators, most of the time it goes into a voicemail. Do those get treated the same way? Do they record those opinions that you leave on a voicemail?
I can't speak to current practice. When I was there, yes, we would listen to. So first off, when I was there, we tried not to have them go to voicemail because that was considered poor constituent service. But if they did go to voicemail, we would try to listen to them, and again, we would do the same green sheet process on them.
Thanks.
And Amy has confirmed that that is useful here too.
Thank you.
Oh, I have one last thing to throw in. You had asked about the spam filter. Emailing from campus, even using your own email, is a bad idea because it will have an EKU IP address on it, and the spam filter identifies emails that come from the same IP address and puts them in the spam folder. So even from your personal email, if a whole bunch of emails come from EKU's campus, those will go into the spam filter. So email from home, separate IP address, will be better and will be treated more promptly. Senator McGuffin.
I know with another project that I'm working on, we have specifically emails coming from our participants and so on. And I was just wondering if there's an organized effort to reach out to alumni at EKU to provide emails, to provide phone calls, and giving them specific maybe talking points that they may want to discuss if they do that. So just wondering if there's an effort out there, an organized effort to reach out to alumni.
And there is not on the part of the institution because that would be asking them to act on behalf of the university and not as private citizens. So we have to stay out of urging people to take specific action, although we can always encourage civic engagement generally. Individuals, you as a private citizen, you can reach out to whomever you like, not on your EKU email from the EKU campus. Chair Brent, are there any other questions for me?
Why there wasn't no, is there any other talking point you want to highlight within your report, Provost?
I think the board meeting updates are pretty clear. We will move forward with the essential education proposal, which is now approved, and you'll hear more from me on the implementation plans shortly. And then I just today organized the first meeting of the group that's going to look for options on the Black box immersive space. Lynette Noblet is on that. Jessica Christ is on it. And Emily Hofelich from School of Communication is on it and has some expertise in this area. And I am personally on it as well.
Well, thank you for that, Provost. Are there any other questions? Senator Satimi.
Yes. Your report mentioned that they're going to surplus the planetarium. Is that a euphemism for they're going to tear it down?
Yes, the official motion is to surplus it, which means it hands it over to the university to dispose of. So yes, it means we're going to raise the planetarium.
Thank you.
Pending other questions, we'll go ahead and turn the floor over to Faculty Regent Noble.
Okay. I submitted a report. It really has three major parts. The first off, of course, is finances. Right now, I think the greatest thing that we need to wait on right now is House Bill 500 and exactly what our state funding will be. We've been warned by our new CFO, and I've spoken with Alan Long at length. We really have to know those numbers, and in particular, if there's any, you know, what the differences are for those numbers and the performance-based numbers before we really can do a budget build. We do, you know, our ability to raise tuition is capped. I think there's also, you know, a desire that we would not do that. So it looks like hopefully I will have some more information for you by the next Senate meeting, but I would not be shocked if it does not have to come out sort of in the interim, that it's going to be that sort of a late scramble. But as the president has already said, it does not look cheerful, shall we say. There's no proposals that we get additional money or even that we remain harmless. So that is something that we're going to have to be dealing with in the upcoming 6 to 8 weeks. Second, obviously academic affairs, the discussion of essential education did occur and did pass. Again, I think I have far fewer concerns about essential education passing in terms of curriculum. I have far more concern about the processes that were followed. I did express those concerns to all members of the board. I think they were made aware, but obviously they chose to vote for essential education to pass regardless. The rest of the board meeting, we spent quite a bit of time on the plan for comprehensive plan for the campus. If any of you have taken any time to look at it, there are a lot of buildings that are proposed to be renovated, Combs and Wallace being two of the main prime workhorses on campus. So if you teach in those, someday it's on a list to be renovated. There's also several that are proposed to be raised. I guess my biggest thing right now is I would just tell you to temper your excitement or your fear of the fact that in many ways it's, as I told my colleagues, it's an unfunded fairy tale. It's really not much more than that right now. We don't have any plans or any money to get any of this done. It is simply a way in which we are starting to try to think of, you know, when it comes to a point in time where we might have money or might have the ability to make, make these investments, these are the things that we want to do. I'll just lastly also put a shout out for the planetarium/planetarium replacement. I wrote in my report, I am disappointed that we could not save the planetarium. I commend Regent Long for also discussing that the long period of time in which the board and the administration took to make decisions on this made the decision almost for itself as the price kept raising and raising. But I am attempting to look at this as a glass half full situation. The board does seem very excited about trying to develop some type of immersive learning lab in the black box. An immersive learning lab, for those of you who have ever attended museum presentations where you're sort of surrounded by lights and you feel like you're entering in these rooms and can touch walls and really interact, that's what we're talking about here. And we will get some more information out. If your department or your program might be interested in participating and helping us choose exactly what system we'll be installing in the black box, please let myself or Provost Ziegler know. We're looking for other individuals to join us in making sure that we get the right system, both for EKU students and for the K-12 and greater community out there. So I think everything else is my report. Are there any questions I could answer? Yeah, Ray.
Hi, Lynette, in your written report, you made a comment about concerns about future erosion of shared governance. Is that just kind of a general uneasiness that you have, or is there something on the horizon that we should be keeping our eyes out for?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and say it's a general uneasiness, though, again, the the flippant nature by which the curriculum process was largely ignored or supplanted by other administrative actions, I think it is not baseless. But no, there's been no discussions of, oh, here's how we plan to change actions of shared governance, if that's your question.
Thank you.
Other questions? And again, I'll keep people updated as I can with budget numbers. We may or may not have anything by the next Senate session, just depending upon what the legislature does.
Thank you, Regent Noblet. I reached out to the student Regent Barker. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here due to class and meeting conflicts. I asked if there's anything that I could report on their behalf, and nothing actually came through. With that, we're going to go to new business items. And of course, I always thank Ethan for being here in attendance and providing the memos. We're getting our work sync in place, where I reach out to kind of figure out what policy and updates they want to bring to the table. Two came through. One, of course, the general memo regarding updates to policies and regulations, and the other regarding 9.3.2, which is in regards to deadly weapons and or materials and instruments coming to campus. So with that, Ethan, you can speak to that much better than I can, if you're comfortable giving an overview of those materials.
The written report's there. So if you want to have any questions, I'm happy to answer, but I think those are going to set out.
Any questions for University Council? Look at this. All right. Moving on, you all should have gotten an email from me earlier today. If you didn't, we might be missing you on the email chain, and we got to correct that. But we have some action items pertaining to today's agenda. The first three coming to head are the nominations and elections for various vacant positions. As a caveat, we need to fill these positions today so that way these committees can move forward with their work, with the understanding that it's only going to be for the rest of this academic term, because we're going to come on to a new election cycle for academic year 26-27. So this is just going to be patchwork to get through this current term. So with that, I go ahead and present it to the floor, both in person and electronic space. Do we hear any nominations for the budget committee member? We have one vacancy to step into that role.
Just a question.
Yes.
Not volunteering.
So Senator Citini with the question.
When did these committees meet?
Volunteer. Oh, no. So Senator Lau, can you speak to when the budget committee generally meets?
Generally, it is the third Wednesday at 9 a.m.
Third Wednesday each month at 9 a.m.
This is also just a question. We still have
Senator Knockley.
Thank you. We still have the rule in place that members can only sit on two committees at once.
So yes, only two committees per member is still in place, which is going to stretch some things thin. Any other questions regarding?
What about the other committees?
Well, so do we hear any nominations for the budget committee member? Or are we going to leave the budget committee short staffed primarily because I'm Senator Steamy so kindly volunteers? Do we hear another nomination to run against Senator Sedini? Hearing or seeing none by acclamation. There we go. Senator Steamy, welcome to the budget committee. And moving on to the rules committee, same general idea. It's going to be a short iteration for this. Senator Bishop Ross, can you talk to us a little bit about the Rules Committee? I know during the last meeting, you spoke about how a large chunk of the work was pretty much behind the committee, which I'm going to use that as a selling point to potentially get a nomination for the committee. And for Winnie Paul.
My video camera, I just got a new computer and my video camera just refuses to work with it. So I don't have my camera on today, but Rules has two more meetings scheduled, one for March 16th, the Monday after spring break, and then April 13th. Both of those meetings are at 4 p.m. They're roughly 30 to 45 minutes long. We don't have a whole lot of stuff. We did a lot of our heavy lifting already with all the changes we've made to the bylaws. We're just waiting on all those things to get approved. So I suspect that our next meeting will be writing up a summary to get it ready for the April and May meetings.
What I'm hearing is anybody who wants to jump on that committee can put their name on a lot of heavy lifting that's
and already hey, it would this. It would be really nice if anyone who's planning to continue on Senate next year would like to join that committee and help out our one remaining member who's carrying over to pick up the torch to take care of all of our rules documents.
That would be wonderful. It's a good committee. I'm on there too. This is Aaron. Sorry, Senator Stevenson.
So with that, do we hear any nominations for the Rules Committee? Please don't let this be super awkward via in-person and online space for tomorrow.
Do we know who's not on a committee?
I know we had this issue at the end of the last academic year where we're coming across, there were more committees and people doing service roles.
We have some volunteers.
Senator Hill is volunteering for the Rules Committee. Thank you, Senator Hill. Yay! Do we have anybody else that wants to try to run about against Senator Hill? See, nothing but positivity for you. By acclamation, Senator Hill, welcome to the Rules Committee.
Welcome.
Making a note. And last but not least, the AQC with the heavy lift that they've got going on. I'm going to go ahead and hand over the mic here to Senator Yoder if you want to speak about the heavy lift that the AQC is always tasked out to do. It sounds bad, like I'm not selling your position very well. Great group of people. Should you attend the meeting in person? Senator Yoder has a track record of making quite phenomenal cookies, better than the ones I store buy versus bake from scratch from Walmart. Yeah. So, Senator Yoder, if you want to give some context.
We should meet in person, but we have only met online, 3:30 on Wednesdays, right? So 3:30 on Wednesdays. Academic Quality Committee has a wide range of charges. I can show them all to you, but it's a lot of different things pull something up here, right? So I can read them off. But we're looking at faculty staff composition. We're looking at AI. We're looking at the new tuition policy and seeing its effect. We're looking at the progress report to see its effect.
Now, to give some context, I didn't work with institutional research. A lot of the work that they're doing, we're still waiting on data cycles to complete. So while this year is going to maybe just mining a lot of data, next year will be a lot of the lift on analyzing the data and getting the hands on the actual data to do the work is when it's actually going to be fun. So if anybody wants to really get involved in matters that are affecting academic affairs, this might be the time to get involved, to look at the data that's coming through. That way, if you want to stay on the committee, you have a situational awareness in the context of the work that is being done. Got a comment, Senator Yoder does a great job chairing, keeping us on track. Kirsten has continued to help out even after having a new baby join us. It's fun. So with that, do I hear, can I get a nomination for the AQC committee or AQC? Going to volunteer, but I'm out of town. So Senator Fairchild says she's going to be out of town on the March 18th. Would you still be okay?
Is she available on Zoom?
Would you be available on Zoom the 18th or on 4/8 on April 8th? Senator Fairchild, would it be possible to do work remotely, not on the 18th, to kind of help collect the data? Like, you may not be there on the 18th, but still kind of be working peripherally around the 18th and then on the 8th. So she can meet on in April.
Yeah.
Senator Fairchild, am I subtly hinting at a potential nomination. Sure, if Garrett is okay, if I miss the first meeting. I get there's a really enthusiastic thumbs up, not like a normal thumbs up, like a real enthusiastic thumbs up. So any other nominations? If none, by acclamation, Senator Fairchild, welcome to the AQC. And I do have to say, I'll take a moment. I know as I kind of step back and look at everybody's service lines, the things that we do, not only on Senate, but just in your role as faculty and some of your working advisors, and then you're doing additional duties for your departments, and then you're getting tasked out by your college, and then other service lines at the university. I know you already take on a lot. And I know we kind of play around with who wants to be on these committees, but I understand that even the smallest thing right now, it may be like a penny that you're throwing in the bucket, is quite a heavy penny that you're contributing. So trust me, I understand that taking these on is not taken lightly. So I do appreciate everybody's work that you're doing on these committees, and just your willingness to even entertain taking on a service role is appreciated more than you know or I can ever express. So again, thank you, everybody. Back to the Senate meeting format. So during the last meeting, we informally started talking about what the format of Faculty Senate was going to look like for the upcoming academic year. Off and on throughout the year, I was getting comments about maybe going back in person, staying remote, pivoting to a Friday given block scheduling, staying on a Monday, maybe moving earlier on a Monday so that way we're not meeting past 5 o'clock on Mondays. So all of these options were thrown out. And before taking it to official vote, I thought I'd kind of prep the landscape and do an informal vote at the guidance of those like Senator Bishop Rochowitz, are much more tactile than I am. So with that, we wanted to bring back the conversation. I know we asked that everybody kind of go back and talk to their departments, colleges, and respective units about what representation could look like. If two things happen, one, the first would be we move to an earlier meeting on Friday, given block scheduling. The comments that I got via email during the interim between our two meetings was that by and large, it might work for a lot of people's schedules. It may not work for those holding labs who have practicums that are tasked out otherwise on a Friday. The response to those comments generally revolved around then maybe that's why we have alternates on the days where you might be tasked out, or it may be time to pass on the torch to other members of Faculty Senate. The other idea was you just kind of move to an earlier Monday meeting. I don't know what that's going to look like, given the fact that we do have block scheduling where a lot of classes still run Monday to Thursday. By and large, when I take stock of the comments and the emails that came through, most of the preference was given towards pivoting the meetings to Fridays earlier in the day, so we're not moving later. Those who actually have tasks to complete on Friday, that's why we have alternates, or you find a different Faculty Senate member. Those are kind of the broad comments that came through. Of course, when we pivot to talking about in-person versus remote, greater engagement in person, a little bit more engaged, a little bit more, you have face-to-face conversations, you can really get in the topics and issues a little bit more, given the things that are going to come down. For instance, when we're talking about a $7.2 million potential budget cut to the operating expenses, the fact that at the state level, we have House Bill, I believe it's 490, that's talking about removing faculty given financial exigency, misalignment, enrollment. Please make no mistake that the decisions that Faculty Senate might be able to provide some guidance on aren't limited and they're not light. So some of the comments regarding to moving to in-person would be, you're a bit more present, a bit more engaged. However, I do understand that, you know, kind of life gets in the way, and in this presence of like part-time instructors, it might be hard to get here. So these are some of the broader conversations that have built out why this question is coming to vote for today's meeting. So with that, we'll go ahead and make, well, if I can hear a motion to move Faculty Senate, we'll do this in two parts, move Faculty Senate meetings first to Friday, earlier in the day. If I hear a motion, then in a second, we'll talk about that motion. We'll take that to vote and then pivot to potentially moving Faculty Senate meetings to in-person meetings during whatever's voted on regarding the day and time. So do I hear a motion to move Faculty Senate meetings early Fridays?
So moved.
Senator Satimi.
Mm-hmm.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by, I heard some.
Senator Stevenson.
Senator Stevenson, and open it up for discussion. Senator Day.
How early on Friday?
Like for 3:30 in the morning, we're going to knock down. That's something I think is, as long as we understand that it's going to be early in the day, we can send out or kind of look at schedules on that best fits. Given box scheduling, the new time box just came out for scheduling purposes. We kind of figure out when is the least used time space and plan it according to what the university schedule fits or allows. Senator Diekman.
Yes, I would like to speak against this. First and foremost, because we do have model laboratory faculty who join us as part of our Senate. And my understanding is that they are not moving to block scheduling, so they will be teaching on Fridays. And this seems to be some disenfranchisement of some of our representatives.
That's a great point. Now, here's a follow-up because it's just my lack of awareness. So that's a great point. Thank you for bringing that particularly to my attention. Would pivoting to, no, I don't even want to bring that up. I feel like that's just going to get me absolutely thrown off. So leaving it on a Monday from 3:30 to 5 would be your recommendation.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, perfect. Okay, that's a great point. Thank you for that. Any other discussion items?
I have a question.
Question from
Stumbo.
Senator Stumbo.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that model faculty were on the Senate. Is there any record of their attendance?
So there is record of attendance. They are on the roster. They are, you know, listed members of faculty Senate. Now, whether they attended previously, I don't think should sway whether we give the scheduling space for them to be here moving forward, I think would be the issue. Does that answer your question, Senator Stumbo?
Yes, thanks.
Senator Howell?
I discussed this change with several of the faculty in my department and with some faculty from other colleges. My department is broadly in favor of this. In particular, having it during the earlier part of the day provides a lot better opportunity for access to administrators. We don't have to schedule as tightly at the beginning of the meeting for administrators to be here because it's part of their normal work week. So it makes it easier to do oversight in that area. And that it also opens up possibilities for additional faculty who have children if they are meeting in Senate during the school day. So there will be some losses in representation one way or the other, just because we all have different aspects of our lives. So my faculty is broadly in favor. I did speak with some faculty from the College of Science and the College of Health who tried to explain the lab issue to me. And I regret that I still do not fully grasp it, but I would be very interested in one of the senators from those colleges elaborating on the concerns, because they seem to be more than trivial. And I think the Senate would benefit from hearing from those colleges.
Thank you, Senator Howell. With that, I'm going to go ahead and ask if there are faculty from those departments or units to kind of provide some context so we can have a situational awareness before moving into this vote.
Okay, I've been talking too much. Okay, so well, the
Senator Santini, by the way.
In the STEM college, we almost always have laboratories associated with them, and they don't fit into the 80-minute block.
Right, the standard blocks.
Right. And so although it's possible for us to put them into the Monday through Thursday, in most cases they're scheduled for, they're gonna be all scheduled for Friday.
Sure.
I don't know how, you know, myself, I'm only gonna have one, but I'm guessing there are people in my department that are gonna have like three of them on Friday. They're gonna be all day.
Okay.
Starting the first thing in the morning.
Gotcha.
Senator DeLage. Very similar circumstance where some of our labs are two time blocks. And so we are preparing students for graduate school, often in physical therapy and athletic training. And so we do our best to balance with the science courses and the prerequisites that are required. And we will create our lab schedule usually based on the science labs, so students aren't trying to take two labs that are double blocked on the same day. There's probably more to the circumstance of scheduling that I'm aware of, but that's probably the best generalization.
Thank you, Senator Lodge. And I also see Senator Mott on here.
Yep, I'm from biology. In addition to the issues with lab, we also have a number of our faculty that conduct field research. And with the new block scheduling, Friday would probably be the only day where we wouldn't have to have a physical presence on campus and go out to our field sites. And so this would obviously have an effect on that.
And thank you. And Senator McGuffin.
I was just going to mention, just looking that at the model lab senators, there are five as of right now represented there. And so that would be potentially five senators that are affected by a move to Friday during the day. And I know that from an adjunct and part-time faculty representative standpoint that I have job responsibilities on Fridays during the day, and I'm not sure if that would be true of whoever follows me as an adjunct part-time representative, but I have to attend to those full-time job responsibilities for my regular employment if it is before 3:30. So just wanted to make sure that, you know, those kinds of things are aware out there, aware, and that, you know, when you're looking at diverse voices on the Faculty Senate. Now, both of these changes are affecting those diverse voices. So, you know, as you're making those decisions, then that is something that you want to be aware of as well. If you want homogeneous representation, then these are the kinds of changes to make. But if you want a more diverse representation, then you have to consider those outside voices as well.
Thank you so much, Senator McGuffin. I see Senator Sturdy.
Yeah, I have a question. Is there any reason we couldn't alternate for a year and see where things end up? Like one time had Mondays, the afternoons, next time morning Fridays, which out each month, see if see what happens next year.
So I don't know if the
that might be a news.
The Zoom room heard, but the question would be, is there a reason why we can't just alternate? One day we do a morning, early afternoon. The next we do the standard 3:30 to 5:30 meeting on a Monday. So late Monday, later Monday, early Friday. I think the question, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, from Senator Diekman and Senator McGuffin, that would still limit the degree or the capacity for both model lab faculty, part-time faculty, and those who are doing labs. It would still kind of preclude them on those days. The other response I've gotten regarding moving this to Friday and it negatively affecting is we are meeting once a month. So you're taking one Friday out of the month. So that's the counterpoint to that. So is there any other discussion points to be brought forth? We've heard both positive and negative, Senator Day.
This isn't really a positive or a negative, but more of an investigative tactic. I believe in the schedule in my UKU, you can search, well, I know that you can search only for a time without any kind of subject, without any kind of faculty members listed. You can just search a time. And if we pop in the relevant time blocks, we could see how many people in general on campus are available at that time. Historically, I know that Wednesdays in the 3 to 4 range, more faculty tend to be open. And I know that's when a lot of departments have their faculty meetings because of that. English does that, and I know several departments that meet at that time. So I think the Monday, Wednesday, 3:30-ish block might be the time that more people are available.
Okay. So what I may be hearing, maybe entered the room. What I may be hearing is perhaps it might be worth making a motion to table this to do a little bit more investigative, some data analysis on scheduling to figure out when courses, labs reach out to model and figure out the degree to which they might be able to attend earlier days. Talk with Senator McGuffin to kind of figure out what that might look like as far as pipe time instructors and get a better situational awareness before moving to a vote that, in Senator Diekman's very correct terms, could disenfranchise certain groups, though it might be a good move for the masses, it may not be a good move for all. So perhaps it may be worth tabling both the vote to move Senate meetings to Friday as well as to in-person meetings till next month, to where I can do a little bit more homework on working with the registrar's office and look at what scheduling and people's and faculty's tasks look like on a Friday specifically. Any discussion items on that? Senator Stevenson, if it works for the majority, we might elect different senators where it does not work, question mark. So it's being brought forward that if we take it to vote, and Senator Stevenson, please correct me if I'm wrong, if we take it to vote now and it works for the majority, then it might be time to elect senators where, if this move to earlier Friday works, it's up to those units to select individuals that fit the move.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility.
Senator Diekman, I see your hand raised.
Yes, I would just once again like to reiterate that the model faculty all teach on Friday. So we can't just have an alternate for model faculty when all model faculty are not going to be available at that time.
So it sounds like from
those partners that moving anything before 3:30 any day is going to have that same effect.
Is that correct?
If anyone's in Zoom in the room, please mute yourself.
So if you're asking me specifically, Chair Brent,
yes.
So
do you know more than I do about kind of what the teaching structure of Model Lab looks like?
So somebody posted that, well, they can just get a sub on that day. But again, I think that saying, you know, well, they can just do something additional. They can add to their teaching burden if they want to participate in this. I think that first of all, I think we send the message that maybe we don't value their input as much. If we're saying, well, you need to adjust your schedule, we know that you have a conflict every single time that we're going to have a meeting if we switch it, but because it's more convenient for us, you should do more work in order to be able to meet what is more convenient for us. And that bothers me from an ethical standpoint. But my understanding is that, you know, while there are ways to work around it, and while same thing, you know, I'm also in STEM, so I also have the same issues with potentially having labs and other things. And, you know, could we work around it? Could we find a way to do it? Should we just, if we're teaching at that time, we should just have our alternate do it for the whole year, or we just need to rotate off and let somebody else do it? That seems very, I think everybody should be given the opportunity to participate if they want to participate in faculty governance, if that's their interest. And I don't think that we should set up barriers for people to be able to participate. That's the last thing I'm going to say about it.
Thank you for that. It does sound like, Senator Lott, go ahead.
The only thing I'll add to this is that I think Senator Stevenson kind of suggested that, you know, there's going to be some change next year anyway. So we're making a schedule that works best for us, but all of us may not be here next year anyway. So I know how I'm going to vote, and I don't think I need another month to figure this out. And I think the more time that we can give departments to know what the schedule will be, then those departments can elect senators who can meet the expectations and obligations and schedule of the Senate. And it gives them more time to do that.
Thank you, Senator Lau. I have a hand from Senator Satimi in the room.
Just to echo Dr. Monk's thing there, the reason I'm on now is because I'm the only one who is free on Monday afternoon. So I think they're scheduling their classes at the end of September. But that's the only reason I'm on, you know, and that's the way it's pregnant to me, is that some people are going to be able to make it and some people won't.
And
based upon their personal schedules.
Okay. And Senator McGuffin?
And to your point, I mean, for someone like me, my schedule may not be flexible on a Friday because I have work responsibilities. Another adjunct or part-time faculty may, but to the point with the model lab teachers, they're never going to be available freely on Fridays because of their school schedules. So that, I think, is where the real concern comes into play as far as availability and representation. Is they're never going to be available on Fridays, regardless, just because of their school schedules and because of the way that that runs.
So just as to see if anybody's actually on, is anybody in the Zoom space from Model currently that we can get some insight from in real time? Senator Hammond, yes. Is there anything that you might want to share with the larger group on this matter?
Sure. I'll just say we also have different roles here at Model. So, for instance, I'm the speech language pathologist, and in the state of Kentucky and in other school settings, I'm never given a sub. So it's not really an option for me to have a sub to come and fill in for me while I would attend a meeting.
Thank you for that. It sounds like we're coming to an impasse. I know that some feel strongly about just moving it to vote, while there are some very real logistic matters that we have to contend with, Senator Day.
I just did the EKU, my EKU search.
Yes.
And the 3:30 Monday area has something like, let me see, 134 classes scheduled during that time. On a Friday, I just put Friday. I didn't specify any time. There are 38 classes scheduled on Friday.
I feel like I'm being pushed into a very terrible corner, but I got to say it. So if the number of courses is lower on a Friday, and to not create a meeting that bars people from attending, it sounds like moving to a Friday from 3:30 to 5 would be the move that would opens possibility for most. Thank you for that corner. So with that, it sounds like what may be a course of action, because we still have a couple months before we even start electing new senators and standing committee members anyway, that if it's okay with everybody here, we haven't had a motion to bring anything to vote, can I hear a motion to table these votes? I'll go do some more fact finding, some schedule analysis, work with Model Lab directly, work with part-time instructors to bring you more information so we can have a better situational awareness before we make a vote that can negatively impact groups that we're not even aware of on how it's going to have an impact yet. So do I hear a motion for that?
I make a motion we table the vote until the next meeting.
So I got a motion from McGuffin. Do I hear a second? Seconded. All right. I'm sorry. And just because we've had the discussion, can we go ahead and get a vote on that? And that is in the chat. Thank you for that. If we move to Friday at 3:30, I'm going to have to retire from Eastern completely. Well, it's been fun. And it looks like the votes are still coming in.
We have 27 that said yes, table.
And we have how many? 21. So motion passes. Mm-hmm. So I promise I owe you all some more fact-finding schedule analysis, working with Model Lab, working with part-time instructors, so that way we don't make a decision that can negatively impact groups that we're not even aware of on how it's gonna have a tertiary effect on. So thank you for that, for entertaining the conversation. Again, the more information, the better. This is something that I learned today. So thank you both to Senator McGuffin, Senator Diekman, and Senator Hammond for bringing those points to the table. I appreciate it very much. Comments and questions from faculty, Senate body. Here's some questions that have come through in the last few weeks. There has been some questions about the academic impression survey that was released about, it was conducted about a year ago at this point, and there was talk about whether those results were ever going to be released. I spoke with the provost's office about that, and they're currently trying to find tactful ways of getting information that might be able to summarize what was given out, not exactly the raw results. From my understanding, is one avenue to do so is to release potential summarized findings through chairs. So those are the next steps that I've been able to identify working with the provost office and other university officials on that matter. We've looked into the use of automated advising emails. This has been a point of concern among not only faculty, but I've also had the opportunity to talk with advisors. It's actually happening to advisors as well. And during our last executive committee meeting and our problem solvers meeting, we identified some potential steps to mitigate some of the negative effects of it. By and large, when those concerns about automated emails do come through, it's generally well accepted that it's a positive strategy. It increases touch points with students. It's beneficial. It increases enrollment and retention. However, just the way that it's being done could be refined. So by way of example, we've talked about potentially having emails go out to faculty and advisors ahead of time before those emails go to students, talking about your advisees are going to receive this email. Here's what it's going to say. Here's when the email is going to go out. That way, a greater situational awareness. That way, faculty and advisors don't get hit with these emails from students saying, hey, I got this email from you, and nobody actually knows what was sent out, when it was sent out. So just kind of keeping everybody in the loop on when those emails do go out. I did get confirmation that the university is able to do it again because the emails aren't really owned by us, they're by the university, which leads to the more moral question, should this be able to be happening? And that's kind of what led down to the conversation of, are there potentially mitigating strategies or some standard procedures that could be put in place so that way the emails that are going out using the emails that are being used are made aware of what is being communicated to students and when is it being communicated to students? Sorry, Senator Jansky, if I blew past something that we've already talked about, that's completely my fault. I see your hand.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to the academic impressions to say.
My fault.
No worries. The provost, I couldn't figure out how to raise my hand on here. So it took me a while to even be able to click that icon. So the provost told me, and John Dixon confirmed this, that the provost, John Dixon, and the president recorded like a podcast about the results of the academic impression survey, and then that was never released to the public. And so there exists somewhere a recording of the president, the provost, and John Dixon talking about the results of that survey.
I would love to put that in archives.
If that one exists, and nobody can find it, that's one impressive. And two,
they never released it. They recorded it. John Dixon confirmed this in our welfare committee a couple of like last month that this thing existed and it was done.
I will find out if that file exists and see if I can't. I hate to say it, release that file. And we'll see if that might be a possibility. If that does exist and it's confirmed by John, we'll kind of figure out where that rests.
Two out of three people that were there have confirmed that it exists. And I'm not trying to put things, we've talked about this in the welfare committee, and maybe I'm not supposed to talk about it out publicly, but the president is the only one that hasn't released it. I think he's the one that's hiding behind the non-release of it. But that's a Ray Lauck question, not a Tim Jansky question.
Well, Senator Lauck, that opens the floor to you, sir.
Well, you got to refresh my memory because we got so many surveys. This is not his evaluation. This is not the president's evaluation. This was the kind of the broader program.
Yes, this is not. We're not talking about the faculty evaluation of the president for the purposes of the Board of Regents annual review of the president.
Yeah, I would think that's subject to the Open Records Act. I don't. I off the top of my head right now, I don't remember all the exceptions, but. I'm not sure they can withhold that.
As with many other files currently not being shared, we'll look into this one for sure. Thank you for that, Senator Jansky. Lunch and learn. I just received word back from Ryan Wilson that we can set a lunch and learn. My apologies for April 29th from noon to 1 o'clock. I'll be working with the president's office to establish some talking points, some themes that you all would like to cover. So please, as always, feel free to email me some topics of concern or some action items that you would like the president to talk to the larger faculty body about during that lunch and learn. Again, that is scheduled for April 29th from 12 to 1 o'clock as of now, pending anything else shifting that schedule. Notes from the February 25th Board of Regents meeting. I think the Provost's Office and Regent Nobley did a tremendous job on hitting the wave caps on that. If you have any questions, we can take them now. If you want to send them our way, we can certainly respond to those as they come through. Some ongoing business items. We have some ongoing elections. The executive committee is in talks on and in process of electing a new faculty grievance liaison. We looked at the bylaws. I had to educate myself on kind of what those look like for the executive committee. We're currently looking for a person who has received tenure 3 years that can serve the term. So we'll send out those solicitation emails to get a nomination and to move forward on electing the new faculty grievance liaison for the 26-27 academic year. The election and nominations committee and faculty senate have been working together to get a new part-time senate representative and elective, an alternate elected for the next academic year. On to policy work. This is where I'm going to go ahead and pivot. If you want to come up, I can go ahead and share the screen. We have the faculty rights and responsibilities that have done some tremendous amount of homework on university policy, specifically the policy on policy. So what I'm going to do is, yeah, you want to share? Perfect. I'm going to go ahead and turn over the stage to faculty rights and responsibilities. If you want, I can pull it over on this screen. Do you want me to pull it up in your phone as well?
Sure, yeah.
Screen up. Just go ahead and show your screen.
Share my screen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, you got it?
Well, yeah.
Oh, is there a person?
I've actually shown you. Yeah, might be really well.
The first time we've ever had technical problems at faculty sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it says I'm sharing. I don't know, but I see it.
I think it's behind that.
Yeah.
All right. No. Everybody should be looking at the.
Okay.
Can I get a thumbs up if everybody's looking at the presentation, policy 1.1.1? Perfect. There you go.
If you look there.
Am I sharing or are you sharing?
It says John Brent's screen up there. I thought the same.
No.
See, this is the fun part of having a hybrid meeting. Yeah. You get to stress out in front of everybody. It's to work.
Okay. So he's gone.
It might be behind that screen. You need to take
from it. There. Yeah.
All right. There we go. Got
it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for
letting us present today. I'm Senator Ginn, and I'm presenting alongside Senator Nathway. I think I still said that wrong. So we're representing Rights and Responsibility today. So we're going to walk through the history of Policy 1.1.1 and how it's evolved at EKU. If you're interested in seeing the prior versions, the link that I'm trying to like show here on the title slide, you can click that, and all the old versions have been uploaded there. So we just added that for transparency. So Policy 1.1.1 is often called the Policy on Policies, but it's actually now called the Policy on Policies and Regulation. And at its core, it's the framework for how the university develops, reviews and vets, and approves and implements and maintains policies and now regulations, which you'll see from this presentation. We're bringing this forward not just as an informational update, but to call to attention and action, because this is up for review this year, 2026. So we're thinking this is a great opportunity for Faculty Senate to examine and potentially shape how policy development occurs at EKU, particularly as it relates to shared governance. So a brief history on the policy on policies. It started as an interim policy back in 2008. So we were surprised that it actually didn't exist until before then. The most recent revision was in 2021, and each change shows how the university has been refining the policy development process. So again, now with the 2026 review cycle coming up, Faculty Senate has a real chance to weigh in and shape how we moving forward. And we're gonna talk more about the changes, and then we will discuss some possible motions, not for today, but for discussion at the end.
Okay, and this slide just shows literally the opening paragraphs of the older 2019 version and then the version that was created and passed into policy in 2021. And I want to point out, first of all, you don't have to read all of this but the two major changes that happen is the institution of the distinction of policies and regulations did not exist before 2021. And also the Board of Regents actually delegating to the president the authority to approve internally developed regulations. So that, I guess, abrogation of authority to the president's office and then the creation of the idea of regulations comes in this. I also want to point out that that is, in fact, quite a substantive revision of the 2019 policy, even in the first paragraph to the 2021 policy. And as we go through what we're about to talk about, you may be asking yourselves, how is it that this was passed by Faculty Senate to begin with? This was in May of 2021. And I want you to cast your minds back to what we were doing, wearing masks, sitting at home, and teaching remotely at that point. So I think that's important context to remember in the midst of this conversation. This distinction between policies and regulations did not exist prior to the 2021 policy revision. Policies, according to the language of the 2021 revision, applies to institution-wide and is directly tied to the legal compliance of the university. A regulation implements a university policy or manages routine operations of the university. So the idea is that these are like executive regulations that actually implement existing policies or simply deal with routine things that are just sort of mundane and therefore don't rise to the occasion of requiring a full policy review. Now, for example, remember what a regulation is. This includes faculty grievance that we've been talking about for a couple of years now. Evaluation and review procedures are regulations. These are part of the day-to-day operations and just a sort of mundane thing. Employee conduct. there are many, many regulations. These are just a handful of them, but these seem quite substantive.
And the definition of regulations implies that there is something less substantive than what these represent. So this is not purely a semantic distinction. When you hear people sort of saying, well, it's a policy, it's a regulation, there's actually, in the policy on policies, there's quite a large distinction between what a policy is and what a regulation is. And I think, is this yours?
It is, yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So this points to the bigger issue is that the president has the authority to approve what is called a regulation and university council in consultation with the president's cabinet only. So they are who decides what is a policy versus a regulation. So like we were saying, it's not just semantics, it's a very different track of approval. And also even what is a policy and a regulation. So as of January 26, 2026, there are 26 policies, but 114 regulations. So the regulations do outnumber policies more than 4-1. So that really makes you stop and think about how shared governance is applied across EKU and just raises questions about whether Faculty Senate has enough voice in these day-to-day decisions. Again, because these were some of the examples of what is considered a regulation, which is only determined by the president's and university council. And then on this slide, this is a table that provides a visual of how policy 1.1.1 has changed over time. So in 2021, any university community member can now originate a policy. So on the surface, that seems more inclusive. But as you look closer, the drafting and the approval process has become much more centralized. University Council coordinates both policies and regulations. And again, only the president's cabinet approves them. So while origination is broader, real decision-making authority has shifted toward administration. So this table shows how this has changed over time. And that's pretty much it there. But we tried to highlight the big changes from 2008 all the way to 2021. And you can see there's Faculty Senate has not been involved since 2016. Okay, and then in 2019, only official units or people backed by an official unit could propose a policy. Examples of official units include the Faculty Senate, the Council on Academic Affairs, Administrative Council, or offices in academic affairs. So this is what they're referring to as sponsorship. But by 2021, any member of the university community can propose a policy or regulation. So that makes the, again, that makes the process more open, but it also means that there's less built-in oversight. A policy could start moving through the process without clear faculty involvement because of this change, and which is something to keep in mind when we talk about shared governance. Okay. And then this just shows a little bit more about what was removed in regard to Faculty Senate responsibilities. In earlier versions, the Senate had clearly listed responsibilities like reviewing policies, providing input, and approving certain policies. However, in the 2021 version, there's no responsibilities listed for Faculty Senate. So its formal role in the process has effectively been removed. Again, when we were all on Zoom teaching that year. And in 2021, the process starts with the originator submitting a justification and description of the potential impact. A new step is that the policy designee I cannot say that word for some reason, categorizes the submission as a university policy or an academic regulation, an administrative regulation, or an HR regulation. So this categorization determines which offices or groups will review that policy and or regulation and whether the Faculty Senate may be involved. Importantly, the 2021 policy also doesn't define who the policy designee is, which we're going to look a little more closely at on the next slides. Oh, I think this is me.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's
So the three concerns from this 2021 origination process: one, there's an unclear policy designee. The 2021 version does not specify who this is, but in 2019, it was clearly the Provost Office for Academic Matters and the University Council for everything else. By removing that distinction, the role now effectively defaults to University Council for all matters is what we're how we're perceiving that. But again, it's just not clearly defined like it used to be. The origination process may not apply to regulations. So if a submission is categorized as a regulation, then nothing in the policy requires the remaining steps to be followed. So it creates a significant gap in oversight. So that's the big thing. It's not semantics. It's a very different track of who's involved. And because of this, we've lost procedural safeguards. The two steps that existed in 2019 were identifying the stakeholders and assessing fiscal impact that, and these are no longer required. So there's just been a big reduction in transparency in the process.
Yeah, and I'm not, and this is sort of a continuation of the last slide. And you can just see there are subtle changes in the order in which things happen. Perhaps most importantly that, and it's hard to tell from this slide, but the 2021, the newest version of the policy and policies removes a lot of explicit reference to who the stakeholders are, particularly for the distinction between academic and administrative regulations. And it just sort of says that University Council and the President's Office will decide who the stakeholders are, but it doesn't actually list them. And then beyond that, this seems like a subtle difference, but this actually, stakeholder review came before the 14-day comment period, which it used to be. It's been reduced to a 10-day comment period, and now stakeholder review comes after that. So after ostensibly, the entire university community has had a chance to list comments on policy, then it's presented to whatever stakeholders might be defined for that policy, if any. And of course, the danger here is that it's seen as being a fait accompli if it's already passed through the policy comment period. And then you're saying, well, what do you think about? I mean, that meaningful feedback at that point might be seen as being pointless. Yes, and I'm going to come back to that. Now, here is what it says about the vetting of regulations. The Board of Regents delegates to the President final approval authority for academic administrator, which, except as noted below, follow the vetting process established above for university policies. So the regulation, the process for vetting regulations, follows the process for policies, except in all the ways that it doesn't. It's essentially what the policy says. And then it points out three times that regulations will be presented to various bodies for information items only. And this we have felt this here month after month as we have seen regulations come before us as information and not voting items, because that's precisely what regulations are. I will also gesture to the use of may and will here. I'm going to come back to that as opposed to shall. So again, right, the first line of the regulation affirms that, like I said, it follows the policy vetting process except where it doesn't. Three times, that was a direct quote from the policy, the last slide. It says three times that these are always information items. We call that repetition for emphasis in the literature business. So I think all feedback on regulations goes through the public comment process after the drafting is done. And then the use of verbs may and will, I have to point out, and we haven't seen this, but technically speaking, under the 2021 policy, the President's office is not even required to present us regulations for notification. They have ostensibly been doing that out of the goodness of their heart. But because it doesn't say shall, the way it's worded, they would not be required to present us with any regulation revisions if they didn't want to. Oh, and this is still me. I'm sorry. And also, just to point out, there's also this distinction made between, especially in terms of archiving regulation changes with university archives. And this comes back to this issue of tracked changes that we've been talking about for a couple of months now. Supposedly not substantive editorial changes can be made by the university policy designee, which again, we see as being, has to be university council the way that it's actually described within the policy without going through the full vetting process. And then those don't even have to be archived. And we also don't know, I think we're still waiting to find out if any of this has really been taking place. And we think not, that a lot of the changes that have taken place have not been kept in university archives, which has been on the books since this policy came into place in 2008. And it's been a rule that's more observed in, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Observed in the breach, but in the observance, yes. Okay.
Okay, so since the policy on policies and regulations is the foundational governance document and the review is imminent, it's happening this year. On the next few slides, we have some proposed motions and also considerations that we would like to discuss specifically so that we, executive committee, gets feedback and then hopefully we can move forward soon at the next Faculty Senate meeting. So some proposed motions. Motion one, we'd like to move to establish a faculty drafting committee that would include collaboration with the Board of Regents, University Council, the President's Cabinet, and of course would have meaningful faculty representation in the revision process. And we have some considerations on the next slide. And then motion two, require that Faculty Senate approve the next and all subsequent policy 1.1.1 revisions. And some things that we discussed, like to restore the procedural safeguards, reinstate requirements for stakeholder identification and fiscal impact in that origination process, like to restore named Faculty Senate participation, strengthen that mandatory language, and restore Faculty Senate approval authority. And if you are following along on the slide, you can also, if you click this link where it says proposed motions, if you want to see it bigger, I just added that in case this was too small and you wanted to view it on your own screen. Or again, they're on the slide. But yes, these are some things we discussed that the drafting committee would consider. So now we'd like to invite Faculty Senate to consider the following questions. Do the proposed motions adequately address the shared governance concerns? Are there additional provisions for this policy that Faculty Senate believes warrant attention in the 2026 review? Can I ask? Senator Bishop Ross, thank you.
Can we all get access to this PowerPoint?
It should be linked to in the agenda that I sent out earlier in the day.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I was going to go a little back again. It's a lot, we know.
Hi, Senator Reif Albright. My question is just a logistical one. Do we have a date for when is supposed to be voted on, solidified?
I do not know. That is a great question.
I think
my limited understanding is going to be taken up to be start being revisited over the summer.
Over the summer. Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly.
So we should probably have a plan, if no one is here, to how we're going to address that if it is over the summer. I mean, I'm going to be here because librarians are always here.
Yeah. So thinking about the timeline that was presented last Faculty Senate, faculty rights and responsibilities today comes with a presentation with motions, suggestions, action items for us to consider. We take this back to our units. During the next faculty senate meeting, we develop a course of action regarding the presentation, like actual things we want to move forward with, some specific tangible outcomes that we want to request and or move on, with our last meeting being with university council to figure out what this can look like as a collaborative process moving into the summer. That was the timeline that was proposed during last faculty senate meeting.
And how do you intend to approach the VOR?
I don't remember what the VOR is.
Board of Regents.
Board of Regents. Yeah. Okay, I was like, why?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's what you got.
And
okay.
Yeah, I was going to say before it gets to that level, just kind of thinking about who we communicate to first. Mm-hmm. I think going straight to the Board of Regents would be jumping a lot of levels. So including the people that actually do the work, like starting with faculty rights responsibilities, going through Senate, going through exec committee, getting the problem solvers, actually talking about this with the people that actually do the policy work, like this is council's lane, if you will, and then kind of moving up the chain that way before we even approach the Board of Regents about this.
I did want to follow up just on one item on your question. Of course, we were hoping to get a vote right next meeting and get something going. I don't know exactly what it'll look like. That's why we're doing the discussion. But I think part of that is also you guys and telling all of your departments to pay close attention to their emails this summer, because that's what happened in 2021, is also just spreading the word to make sure you are checking. I know you're here, but make sure people are attending to the emails as part of it.
Get the rest of the send up there on the screen.
This looks like a lot of great information. Thank you guys for putting it together. I wondered about maybe asking that the policy be pushed back to the fall semester instead of doing the work on it during the summer.
And this is where I think we kind of just take stock of what ideas are. That way we, during the next meeting, can actually come up with specific action items. Mm-hmm. So that way when council gets invited to come in April, we have very clear, tangible, material things we can move on, not theoretical, very narrative-driven concerns about the policy.
And I'm taking notes to push back, push to fall.
Senator Howe? Just to the question of can we push this back to the fall? If we can, that would be wonderful, but I don't think we can. My recollection is that this is partly being driven by the SAC COC timeline, and that would not give us the time to bump it back. So we should plan as if we need to address this during the summer.
So it sounds like perhaps entertaining the question of if we can stand up a drafting work group to work in conjunction with council would be the best way to approach this. We'd have to link in things like provost office and council to figure out what that work group can consist of. I know in the past, when work has had been accomplished over the summer, we have figured out ways with material making that feasible.
I also, and to Senator Rife Albright's and Senator Stumbo's concerns, I also want to put forth the possibility that we can make a motion that we want to have a largely faculty oriented drafting committee, and we can get the answer no back. we need to think about what the contingencies would be in that case, you know, because this, I mean, the one thing that I want to make clear to people is just how much agency and authority this body has lost over the last decade. And if we care about that, then we need to be prepared to do something about it.
So a question for you all, Senator Brent, what do you need from Senate today to best set the conditions so we can establish a plan and communication items for council coming?
Well, I would love to see them approve a drafting committee with faculty representation. I think that, do you agree that's the?
Well, first of all, I mean, I would love to see input from as many actual senators as possible. I mean, definitely access the slideshow, get your own thoughts on this. Look at the policies, which are all there. The historical policies are there to be looked at and sort of come to your own conclusions about it. And then like feel like 100% feel free to email me or Cassie about any thoughts that you might have. And then that leading up to, yes, I mean, I think fundamentally, especially because of the timeline, involved, we need to have a vote at next month's meeting. So be as informed in making those votes as possible.
Do you want to stand up like a Google Doc for everybody to access and throw
it in? That can do like an anonymous.
Okay. Senator Bishop Ross?
Yeah, so for passing or preparing these motions, would they end up becoming resolutions on behalf of the Senate that we're passing? Or like, what are we going to do with the motions if they pass? Is my question.
I'm able to answer that
because so they could. One of the motions may be like just against kind of policy as it's in, so we can't like the second motion on there mandates something that actually goes against our current standing policy. I think if I read it right, so I think it might be more of a resolution at that point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't see any more.
So it sounds like if nobody else wants to chime in now, it'd be good to establish an anonymous Google Doc that people can log into, put up comments, questions, concerns to guide what this is going to look like for next month. That way we can, at the end of next month meeting, have a very clear set of outcomes we hope to pursue with council for April. Does that sound like a plan? Sounds good.
Sounds great.
Sounds great. Thank you. Thank you. Faculty rights responsibilities. Thank you, Senate members, for entertaining this. I know, again, this has been a talking point on the agenda for now. You know, this is 2001. Give me 1 second as I reorient my screen. All right, moving on to discussion of House Bill 500 and 490. That's something that the provost report actually touches on. Just wanted to look at welfare committee. By any chance, have you all, anybody from the welfare committee, heard back from our AAUP rep at the state level regarding House Bill 490, the removal of faculty due to financial exigency in light of, you know, things like shared governance and the House Bill 500 coming down? I didn't know if there's any movement at the state level about that.
It is going before the Senate Education Committee. That's the next step that it has to take.
Got it. Okay. I know some, an email, but an email from Costville, our Costville rep, I think went out earlier today, if they're on specifically, I think about this matter in regards to the dismissal of faculty, but thank you for that context. Student progress reports. A couple comments came through regarding student progress reports that they didn't default towards satisfactory. I'm happy to report that when, from my limited understanding of the IT world, that when Banner was released, when it is released, it's not very customizable once it's released. However, this item is something that can be customized in the coming terms. So I talked with Zach Lewis. Unfortunately, the way it was rolled out this semester, of course, we're past the timeline to make that change. However, this conversation can be carried forward into the summer term and potentially modified going into the fall. So thank you for that comment. That's something that we're working with the registrar and IT folks in general to kind of figure out what that can look like as far as the iteration of Banner that gets rolled out in the fall. So thank you for that. I wanted to follow up as that was a promise of mine. Update to Faculty Senate bylaws. Senator Bishop Ross already talked about that in the Faculty Senate roster and composition. The Election Nominations Committee and Faculty Senate, we're going to look at verifying the rosters in the next coming months, identify vacancies for April 6th meeting. So by the next meeting, we'll have a list of who's coming off Faculty Senate, who's coming off each standing committee. We'll highlight those individuals, highlighting the need for those nominations to come forward and that election to happen
for May. That way we don't go into this summer with an incomplete roster and committees like we did previously, which was fun to try to stand up at the start of the year. Hopefully we can get a jump on this ahead of time. That way when the new academic year hits, we can hit the ground running with a fully staffed faculty senate roster and committees. Concluding business, there's nothing to report. Moving on to standing committees. We'll go ahead and jump to the AQC, co-chairs Senators Campbell and Senator Yoder. Is there any update you'd like to provide?
We did meet for the first time on the 11th of February and talked through things. But like you said, we're gathering data from multiple sources. So we're reaching out, right, to get more data on a number of different issues.
Perfect. And I know this, the end of the year will be primarily tasked with gathering and organizing data, setting the conditions for reports and the fun work to happen next academic year. So thank you for that. Moving to budget co-chair, Senators Lauck and Senator Liddell. I know Senator Lauck, you're on.
Yep. Last month, Senator Liddell presented his analysis of athletic department expenditures. That conversation will continue in the next one that meets in approximately 2 weeks. And we'll also ask the new CFO, the interim CFO, for a report on the audit committee as well, on the audit report, rather.
Any questions for Senator Lauck from the Budget Committee? All right, moving on to Election and Nominations Committee with co-chair Senators McDonald and Senator Sizemore.
Yes, as you mentioned earlier, we are working on compiling a full list of members of the Senate who will be coming off, and the committee assignments as well. Hopefully have that by the end of the month ready for the next meeting. We're also currently conducting the preliminary steps for the adjunct faculty representative. We have a list of potential candidates. We will be sending out an email shortly to those candidates asking for a short bio. I think we're sending that out on March 9th. And then we will have election beginning on April 2nd so that we can have an adjunct faculty in place for the May organizational meeting.
Appreciate that, Senator McDonald. Any questions for elections and nomination committee? Seeing none, we'll go to information technology, IT, with
Actually, we have a survey that we are hoping to send out March 24th and have feedback for everyone at the April meeting. So we've been crafting that and have it in Qualtrics and are just making final changes.
Perfect. Thank you. So be on the lookout for that. Faculty rights and responsibilities, other than the impressive work, that was a heavy lift. We thank you for that. Rules with co-chair Senators Bishop Ross and Senator Stevenson. Oh, wait, sorry, my fault. Senator McGuffin.
Sorry, I'm a little slow on the draw here, but going back to the elections, my term is up in 2026. So I just wondered if that made getting an adjunct faculty substitute representative, if that timeline was going to work with the fact that my position is up, and so it'll be actually a primary position as well as a substitute position.
Yeah, we do. We have both of those working concurrently.
All right, great. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, perfect. That was my fault. I misspoke. So the way that's going to work has happened in the past is the primary is selected from the list that comes through, and then we move on down the list to select an alternate on whoever agrees to fill that position. So I really thank you for bringing that to our attention. That was me missing that information item. So thank you so much. Going to rules, Senators Bishop Ross and Stevenson.
Nothing to report yet.
And I think you did a ton of reporting in the first half.
Yeah, we're done reporting for a little while.
Yeah, you did a ton of reporting in the first half of the academic year. So appreciate that. And then moving on to faculty welfare. Senator Knockaway.
Senator Knockaway, yeah. We're sort of in the middle of still working on that workload report. We got some more data about turnover levels as well as that faculty levels versus enrollments for the past couple of years. So we're still collating a lot of that, but we hope to be able to report about that on
April. It's going to be interesting to see how that affects the scorecard coming.
Yeah.
Yep. Any closing items, final questions or comments from those in the room or Zoom room? I see Senator Lauck with a hand up.
Yeah, I want to go back to the policy 1.1.1 discussion, and I may have missed it. I was starting to do some AI research to see if I could find the answer. Now, and first, Senators Ginn and Nakwe, thank you for that analysis and your committee. It's an incredibly complex topic. My question is, how does this relate in with SAC's COC and the requirements? Because they have requirements for shared governance. And if that's not a question for right now, maybe next month we can get into that, into what those requirements are and how this policy fits into that.
So for those who may not have heard, I know the comms on this side is a little low. How does the policy on policy talk about shared governance, and how does that align with SAC COC requirements, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So the question is, like, if does policy 1.1.1 in its discussion of shared governance or enabling shared governance go against SAC COC requirements on what it mandates for shared governance?
Yes.
I have not looked at SAC COC requirements.
I said, I have not. So yeah. I have a note and I'll look at that. Great
question. Sarah Lauk?
Yeah, because just
added to their to-do list.
Yeah, because according to the all-knowing AI, it looks like there are pretty specific responsibilities or expectations of SAC COC in terms of faculty having primary responsibility for designing, approving, and revising courses and programs, involved in creating policies related to admissions, grading, graduation requirements, and other topics as well. So it'd be interesting to get into the weeds on that next month.
I will interject. This is Senator Nakwe. I suspect that some of those requirements are the letter of the law is fulfilled the way that, because the policy as it is written allows for the president's cabinet and university council to invite stakeholders to give input into policy and regulation drafting processes. But our point is that there's nothing that requires it. And so I think that they could make the argument that they fulfill some of those SAC COC requirements according to the letter of the law, but then it would be up to us to actually make sure that they sort of respect those in the spirit of the policy. But like I said, I don't want to, that's my suspicion, but I would have to actually look and see what the SAC COC policy says.
Yeah, because this quick little search said that faculty must have, and it's in quotes, primary responsibility for courses and programs. And just for example, I wonder how the general education policy that just got adopted by the board of regents would fit into that. But again, though, it'd be good to get into the weeds on some of those things.
Thank you for that suggestion, Senator Lau. Before we move to adjournment, any other final questions, comments, concerns, to-dos, issues that we can carry forward? Or is this the time where I can well wish you nothing but happy spring break and I say adieu to the meeting and ask if there's a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion by Senator Day, seconded.
Second.
By everybody, it sounds like.
Discussion?
Is there a discussion? On that note, I do
know.
On that, I thank you all for taking the time again on a Friday after 5 o'clock. We gave you 10 minutes back with the hope that that 10 minutes doesn't absolutely vilify me when meetings move to potentially Friday at 3:30. Thank you, Senator Day. On that, you all have a great day.